This is The Cable.
Big bid on 10-year treasuries over the last week.
Tech story is front and centre.
A lot of people saying, no thank you, step back. You're saying, get in, why?
Your connection from the London market close to the US market action.
A significant sell-off in European assets.
The dollar a little bit stronger today.
This is a stock that is increasingly being shorted.
The Cable.
An historic moment from which there can be no turning back.
With Jonathan Ferrow and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
Good afternoon to the City of London. You are listening to The Cable live across the capital on DAB Digital Radio. This is Bloomberg Radio at just gone 5 p.m. in the capital alongside Guy Johnson in London. I'm Jonathan Ferrow in New York City. Good day to you, Mr. Johnson.
Good day, Mr. Ferrow. This cabinet meeting's taking a while to get sorted, and I wonder whether or not that portends something a little bit more difficult maybe happening inside, John.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't guess. And every time I try and guess, I get it wrong. So I'm not going to judge anything that comes out of this Brexit situation. Sterling managing to stay firmer at 130.09. I'm looking at implied volatility, overnight volatility, Guy, for cable, the highest in more than a year. And to be honest with you, I'm not surprised. This could really go either way.
I just wonder whether actually the better metric is the 3 month, because that captures so much of the event risk that potentially is coming up. I appreciate the overnight is spiking higher, and I can understand why, but I still think that the cabinet is the first baby step in a way. The bigger step comes with the move to Parliament.
Couldn't agree with you more.
And I think as a result of which, I think you need a slightly longer term picture at this point in time. As you say, it's going to be a series of events. Should we just get the latest now? I think Charlie Pellett's with you. Let's get the latest from him.
All right. And here's what's going on. Some of the stories that we are following for you for today. A French government spokesman stoking the increasingly personal feud between President Trump and Emmanuel Macron, accusing the American president of lacking decency. Benjamin Griveaux said it was disrespectful of Trump to mock France's war record in a Twitter tirade yesterday, the third anniversary of the terror attacks that killed 130 people around Paris. California continues to burn, and the biggest utility in the state has been plunged into full-blown crisis by the possibility that its equipment sparked the catastrophic wildfires that have been ravaging the state. Shares of PG&E Corp plummeting 23% after the company said it had exhausted its revolving credit line, signaling its growing financial stress. Flybe Group has begun takeover discussions with several parties as the rising cost of oil crimps earnings at Britain's biggest provider of domestic flights, and the company faces increasing financial stress. Latest from the news desk, back to you.
Charlie Pellett, thank you very much. Let's get to the top story then, shall we? Prime Minister Theresa May apparently has a deal, but she has a meeting right now to try and convince her cabinet that it's the right one and to get them to back it. At least two Brexiteer ministers are set to back the deal. Two others are still thinking about it. Still far from clear as to whether she'll be able to get that deal through Parliament, even if it does get past her cabinet. Joining me now to discuss and joining Guy and I is Alistair McCaig, Director of Investment Management at Fernwealth over in Switzerland. Al, your view on what is taking place at No. 10 Downing Street tonight?
Yeah, she's Theresa May undoubtedly is trying to be her most persuasive as she possibly can. To say that this could be the right deal, I don't think there's any such thing as the right deal. To say that she's going to be able to get enough people suitably contented with it to push it through, that's maybe more a realistic comment to make, I think. And Guy was very much correct in the run-up here. This is just the first baby step. Getting her own party to agree on it is one thing. Taking it to Parliament and pushing it through there is going to be a whole nother task. She at least needs her team on side, as it were. itself is not completely surprising that we're seeing these discussions drag on a little bit.
The mathematics, Alistair, in Parliament is absolutely fascinating, because in some ways, if you take a look at what this Brexit deal looks like, it's almost a carbon copy of what the Labour Party was asking for. And therefore, you have to wonder whether or not Labour MPs can actually do what the whip suggests, that is, vote against it. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see on a individual by individual basis how this ultimately is going to work. And I guess we're not going to know that, Alistair, until we get probably closer to the event.
Guy, you're quite right, and this probably underlines the biggest problem that the UK has with Brexit negotiations, whereby what individual parliamentarian members think is the right course of action and what their party thinks are not always aligned, and it'll be interesting to see how many, and there will be a few, no doubt, who will vote with their conscience rather than what their party whip says. And to be brutally honest, what really needs to happen here is that all the parliamentarians need to get together and actually start to do what is best for the country rather than necessarily what is best for the political gains. A big ask of politicians to do that, I know, but fundamentally that the history books are going to be writing about this for decades to come.
Some political careers on the line here, aren't they, Guy? Just thinking about it, they're also accountable to their constituency, and the Brexit situation, as we know very well, is not exactly divided by party, is it? It's very, very murky, and it's ripped into the heart of this Cabinet and the Conservative Party, and it's doing the same thing to the Labour Party as well.
And therein lies the rub, because if you were to effectively force a general election as an MP by voting one way or the other in the lobbies, you've then effectively got to go back and get that backed by your constituency, and that could put some people in a very difficult position here. And I think if there were to be a general election, say before Christmas, I think the outcome of that general election would be incredibly difficult to call.
Yeah.
And herein lies the problem, is that there are so many different outcomes. If you go down the route of it not clearing Parliament, the chaotic environment that we then find ourselves in, John, is really difficult to navigate. And there are a whole series of outcomes, and I suspect there are Rumsfeld-like unknown unknowns here that we still haven't figured out yet. And I just wonder at that point how big a message the market would send. Alistair, if it didn't clear Parliament, presumably with the market would just rip into the UK, how grim could it get? What is the kind of absolute kind of left tail risk here?
Well, certainly the FX markets would be the most aggressive. And, you know, fair enough, sterling might well be at the low end of the range of its strength curve of recent times. But I think we can certainly see it back down to where we saw it in the aftermath of Brexit. Brexit results anyway, and possibly even lower. I think, you know, as we get ever closer to the deadline, the frothiness, the percentage of the ultimate fear that markets would have would be escalated and more fully factored in without clear signs of progress being made. So I think the FX markets would be the first to reflect that. As far as the equity indices are concerned, it's a considerably more complicated picture because so much of the FTSE is non-sterling denominated. So you'd have an inverse effect possibly in that. More broadly, the 250, 350 and lower on, you'd imagine that there would be some real pain being felt there.
Yeah.
as the consequences of, you know, a hard Brexit will be more fully factored in individual equities.
I'm not sure a move in sterling gets it done. I think if you saw a move in gilts in a way that would be counterintuitive for a developed market guy, I think then you've got a very, very different story.
I'm not sure parliamentarians would understand that. I think it's unless you had a mega collapse in the gilt market and basically the UK government was really struggling to sell its paper. I think the more immediate kind of move in sterling, which I think constituents would understand, and we come back to this issue of constituents, John.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think that it's kind of so much more visible. You could see the 6 o'clock news on the BBC kind of leading with a massive fall in sterling, couldn't you?
You touched on something important, Guy, and that's that TARP moment for the UK. Just because it fails once in Parliament doesn't mean we move on to something else.
And I think that could be really interesting. Does Parliament get a second bite of the cherry, I think, is or the apple? I think could be a really interesting aspect to all of this. But again, I come back to this issue. We just don't know at that point as to how the politics would work their way through. Anyway, we'll come back. We'll continue this conversation. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Cable with Jonathan Ferro and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
It is 5:10. Good evening. If you are listening in the City of London, we are counting you down to a Theresa May press conference. We think that's going to take place in Downing Street. When that happens, when she emerges from 10 Downing Street with or without a deal on the Brexit front from Cabinet, we will take it to you. Let's talk a little bit about what is happening with the European auto sector. The world, John, seems to be against the European auto sector right now. But today, a little bit of good news coming through. People familiar saying that the White House now looking to hold off on imposing new tariffs on car imports as officials weigh revisions to a report on the national security implications of that. Alistair McCaig joins us, Director of Investment Management at Fern Wealth. Alistair, we saw today a German growth print that I think caught a lot of people by surprise. It was a disappointing number, and the reason we suspect that number was disappointing was because of the auto sector. How big a problem right now for the German economy is what is happening with this sector? Because it's not just the trade story, it's also emissions. It's also the move to electrification. There is so much against it that I wonder whether or not effectively it is a it is a clear and present danger to the German economy.
I think it is. I think it's been signposted for a while, though. When it comes to the automotive sector, specifically the German ones, you know, the slap on the wrist, and it was probably a bit more aggressive than that, that Volkswagen got in regards to emissions and the wake-up call that many of them probably received on the back of it, the speed with which many European cities then started imposing targets for, you know, new electric vehicles on their roads and in their cities, all of this kind of compounded into forcing the combustion engine manufacturing sector to start going, right, we've got to seriously change our game plan here, throw in the mix that the weaker trade position that's going on with the US, and it's added up to a rather nice storm situation hanging over the German auto manufacturers. It is a transition period. It's not going to disappear overnight, even if there is a postponement or even a cancellation or a rewording of US trade agreements. This is still a pretty major transition period that the German automotive sector is going to have to go through, and it's not going to happen overnight. We're talking about electric car factories being implemented up to the sort of 2022 deadline days, and it's going to take much more than that as well.
Have the Germans managed to convince the US administration that, yes, they are German brands, but they are international companies with a huge presence in the United States?
I think they've done certainly a decent job about it. We know that BMW's biggest manufacturing plant's in the US, and not even the other side of the US from Washington. There is plenty of things that they've been able to point towards, saying it's not like they're all being built here. It's a global, let's face it, manufacturing these days of a lot of things, most things, is a global process. Parts get manufactured all over the planet. Maybe they get assembled in one destination, but in reality, manufacturing is a global industry.
In terms of actually the reality of the situation for the German car markets, which poses the bigger threat? The kind of the trade between Europe and the United States, or the trade between China and the United States? Because as you say, as John says, many of these cars are made in the United States for exports to China. And it strikes me that that potentially could be the biggest risk, Alistair.
It is. And something you didn't mention there is the German automotive sales to the UK as well, adding to that complex mix and how important that is to them. You're right. Look, I think we sit here, certainly the Fern Wealth team, we're sitting here thinking sooner or later there will be trade agreements that will be materialized between the US and China, and we're going through the process of watching the Trump administration and the Chinese administration go through their war dances, if you will, and trying to jockey for the best possible positions. But ultimately, both of these parties need to find a way, a resolution,
yeah,
to get a trade agreement in place.
Hey, Al, you're going to stick with us. Alistair McCaig, Director of Investment Management at Fern Wealth. It's been a messy market again today. The S&P 500 on for a fifth straight day of losses. Apple getting kicked around as well. We'll talk about the economic backdrop globally, not just in the United States and the UK. That's next. This is Bloomberg Radio.
This is The Cable with Jonathan Ferro and Guy Johnson on Bloomberg Radio.
This is The Cable, live across the capital on DAB Digital Radio. You are listening to Bloomberg Radio. Apple, almost in a bear market, believe it or not. Big, big move off the highs from a couple of months ago. Big move in the equity market as well over the last 5 days. 5 days lower in the United States. The S&P 500 down another half of 1% in today's session. At the close in London, the FTSE 100 up a third of 1%. Sterling has been all over the place. It's been a total mess. Cable 130.25 and slightly positive going into this meeting with Prime Minister May and her cabinet that is set to conclude, I guess, within the next couple of hours. It was set to conclude at the top of the hour. There was some news reports suggesting there would be a statement by the Prime Minister about 20 minutes ago, and then we learned that this cabinet meeting could well go to 6 p.m. through to 7 p.m. and who knows after that. Alongside Guy Johnson in London, I'm Jonathan Ferro in New York City. It's time to talk about the global backdrop because the data out of China wasn't great. Retail sales underwhelming, a downside surprise there. And in Germany, the Eurozone economy weighed down by the German economy, shrinking for the first time since 2015 in Germany. That means that the 0.2% contraction was not just worse than expected, it was the biggest in more than 5 years. Let's bring in Alistair McKay, shall we? Director of Investment Management at Fern Wealth to discuss what's happening in Germany. We talked about the auto sector. Alistair, the question is whether that was just temporary or whether this continues.
Well, it's an interesting question, Jonathan. The auto sector obviously is so incredibly important, not just to the GDP figures, as it were, for the country, but I think for sentiment for the nation as well. And when we look at lower consumer spending weighing on the economy too, it's not overly surprising when we consider how important and how much of the employment sector revolves directly and indirectly to the more automotive sector. So all of this compounding, it is, I guess, a little bit of a wake-up call, really, to the way things are going. And, I guess this is potentially another one of these underlying reasons why the Angela Merkel reign is coming to an end.
Yeah, what does this mean? And do you think that it is? Do you think that concern around the departure of Angela Merkel is being reflected in any of this data? Like, it would seem a little early, maybe, to be thinking about that. But you just wonder at the back of your mind whether, if you are running a company, if you're making investment decisions, whether or not the political uncertainty features in that. This current coalition could come apart. You would have thought at any moment. We still don't know who the next leader is ultimately going to be. Is it too early to be making decisions based on that?
Well, look, when it comes to Germany, we're conscious that the political structure there has predominantly been coalitions. But that's not necessarily been an issue if you've got a head of that coalition that instills confidence and stability, and that's very much what Angela Merkel did. I think when it comes to leaders, who political or any other kind for that matter, leaders who've been in power for so long, the global view of them tends to be a little bit more positive, a little bit more proactively supportive than the internal view tends to be, because there's always this stagnation internally of, is the grass greener somewhere else, and change for the sake of change. And we see that replicated in so many different countries. So I suspect, that when the new government and the new head comes in, internally, the German economy and sentiment might actually be more positive than the global expectations are.
Al, looking at the story, though, you've got to look at the price of the story, not just where expectations are and where growth is in isolation. We've seen a big move in the likes of euro dollar, the likes in dollar yuan. And I'm just looking at the situation and just looking for just one small, quiet, subtle move where you just get that inflection and that slight upside surprise and a market that starts to reprice again.
Yeah, I think when it comes to the currencies, Germany has obviously for so long enjoyed the benefits of that weaker euro. The chaos and the difficulties we're having in trying to price where fair value in currency crosses is so complicated at the moment that it's, I guess, not offering us any real solid signs as to where that little nuance, that turning point that you're looking for, you're calling for, is actually going to materialise.
Jens Weidmann seems okay at the moment. He seems to be believing that this is a soft patch and the data are pointing to an improvement that we're going to get later this year and into next year. From a German investor's point of view, real yields, I think, just continue to grind lower and lower and lower. How do you keep running an economy when investors just aren't being paid to invest money into that economy? I appreciate that there's a huge surplus of investable income out there. But nevertheless, at some point from a German economy point of view, this needs to change. There needs to be a positive yield attached to investing in stuff that's going to make the German economy more efficient.
That's true. And again, this harks back to what Jonathan was saying. We're looking for that catalytical point, something that's going to turn the sentiment and the mentality. And we're just not seeing it yet. And I've got to say, I'm not sure that there is a point, an action that is jumping out at me that says this is going to be the catalyst.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Alice McKay, Director of Investment Management at Fern Wealth. And the thing that stands out to me, Guy, just looking at the German bond market, is the German 10-year ending the year pretty much exactly where it started it, at 40 basis points. I don't think that was the consensus view that's how the German 10-year ended the year. This was meant to be the year the ECB pulled back on QE, the recovery in Europe continued, and the end of easy money was over. I don't see that in the German bond market.
Nope, absolutely not. And you wonder, as this kind of carries on, whether or not people start pricing through the ECB. Say we get an incredibly short ECB hiking cycle. Let's just assume that happens. You wonder whether or not the market is increasingly, particularly with that kind of duration, just going to look through that and say, actually, maybe we get a couple of hikes in, maybe even less than that. And actually, the market starts at some point to start thinking about pricing in the next downward cycle and all that will bring. I think it's going to be a fascinating process the market has to go through with the ECB and its next boss as well, be that Jens Weidmann or somebody else. Alistair McKay, it's been a great pleasure as ever. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time. Alistair joining us from Fern Wealth. This is Bloomberg.